Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 45 of the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today I'm talking with my buddy Eric Hassanai, who is a ASE certified master auto technician. He's a really nice guy. I hope that you guys enjoy the episode. We get down and dirty into what it takes to be a master tech. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoy it. If you could do me a favor, leave me a review, I would appreciate it. If not, that's cool. I'll talk to you soon. Hey everybody, welcome to the A1 Auto Body Podcast with your host, Nick Sands. Today I am speaking with ASC Master Auto Tech, Eric Hassanai, also known as Works for Tools on Instagram and on YouTube. How are you doing, Eric?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It's fun. I get to catch up.
So, you are a ASC Master Auto Tech. What exactly does that mean?
That means you take a bunch of tests. So, I mean, officially, I think you have to have 2 years of experience before you could take the test, but you have to have 2 years before you're actually given the certificate. I was into working on cars long before I took the test. I think I started in 94 going to school for it, and then I finally took them in 01. Between 01 and 02, I took four of them the first time and four the second time. So there's 8 tests to become master certified in the ASE.
Is that only with, like, auto tech repair, or is that for any, like, ASE certification?
This is for automotive. There are other ASEs that you could take for other things, like they have a parts ASE test, and they have heavy equipment and light, like the heavy trucks, I should say, and light duty trucks. The 1 through 8 is just the regular master certification. And then there's another one I'd like to take in this next future. I'm about to have to recertify next year, and I want to do the L1, which is like the advanced diagnostic one.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's the part of mechanics that I'm really bad at.
Oh, it's not easy, man. And it seems like we always get these phantom crazy stuff at my shop anymore. Intermittent, you know, I call them phantom, but the intermittent stuff is ridiculous.
I like phantom. That sounds way cooler. They should definitely change that. I have never gone through a certification like that. I'm curious, what does that process like look like? I know you said there's 8 tests. Like, are they spaced out? Is it something you actually study for, or is it just kind of something that you learn as you go?
I study. I've been doing it for a long time, but I'm not the greatest test taker. So I usually study months before I got to take the test so that I'm a little better prepared, because the tests are, a lot of them are multiple choice, but then it'll say mechanic A does this, mechanic B does that, who's right, one, both, none, or, you know what I mean, stuff like that.
Right.
So it's really a lot about paying attention to the wording. Some people are really good test takers. I've seen some guys on YouTube say, oh, it was an easy piece of cake. And I'm like, easy for you. But, you know, and so it doesn't matter how great you are or how good you are, if you can or can't take a test. So I definitely study to take them. And what I was getting at before is it's a lot of making sure you pay attention to the way they word something, because it's really in the detail on what they say, you got to pay attention. And then they'll have some the questions where it'll say, what's not the right answer? You know?
Oh, that's tricky. That's
yeah. I spend as much time just practicing the sample questions, just so you can get used to paying attention to how they word it, you know? And then some of the stuff for a lot of people, for me, some of the things, like, especially in the book, the way they want you to test something, they're doing it differently than you would actually do it in the field, you know?
Right. That makes sense. Cause a lot of times, like, on tests like that, they use like the real official kind of rules of the way you're supposed to do it, where maybe in the field or in the real world, that may not even be practical to do it that way.
Yeah. Sometimes it's definitely, I know the books certainly put you on a chase like that when it comes to finding out something simple, like, for instance, a light bulb's out, you know, and they want you to chase the wiring, and does the wiring get from here and there? Well, why don't you go to the bulb and see if there's a power, or if you have a spare bulb, switch the bulb, see if it works, then get into the diag, instead of I got to make sure the wire's good from point A to point B before I find out I got a bad bulb, you know.
That's a good point. I bet you that that's one of the things that is kind of the difference between someone who knows what they're doing and someone who's never actually had to chase an electrical problem.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I noticed that there's one other thing that you and me have in common, and that is that you took that Pocky Hot Chip Challenge.
Oh, did you do that?
I did. I did that with my brother. What did you think about that?
That was crazy, man. It was pretty funny. You know, and go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just saying it was awful. It was so immediate. Like, as soon as you put it in your mouth, it was like, this was a mistake.
Oh, yeah. Did you get the hiccup stuff, too, like I got?
No, we...
No?
I don't think I only lasted, like, 2 minutes. I didn't last any time at all. I'm not sure how long you lasted.
I went a little over 5 minutes before I finally... Because it was supposed to be a five-minute challenge, I thought. I couldn't really find anything official on you got to make it 5 minutes. But everybody seemed to be making... You got to make it 5 minutes. So I did. I mean, I like spicy stuff anyway. So that was a little more. I wouldn't. What?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said that was a little more than I would usually go after, you know. But we had some hot wings from this place in Phoenix that was pretty stinking hot. And man, you ate one and my mouth was burning for 10 minutes. That's what my wife brought up in that video when I did about doing the chip challenge. It's like, was it as hot as those wings? Well, it was a different kind of heat. But it was stupid hot, you know.
For anyone who hasn't done it, it's almost like it, like, sits in your stomach. You can feel it in your stomach for, like,
yeah,
afterward. It, like, sits in there and just it, like, feels like it's rotting you from the inside. It's awful.
Oh, yeah. It keeps on giving its gift, that's for sure.
And I'm a stupid coward when it comes to hot stuff, too. Like, I don't like hot stuff.
I'm surprised you tried it if you don't like hot stuff.
Yeah, I just, me and my brother, I like to just do kind of different fun things with my brother.
Yeah, that's cool.
And stuff, and that was what we decided on. And I actually thought he was going to outlast me. Little did he know, I had trained for like 2 weeks before that, where I was just like spicing my food up, like everything I ate, I just added tons of hot stuff to try and like kill my taste buds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it worked, but I won the challenge. I only lasted for 2 minutes though, so
you beat him though, right?
That's all that really matters.
Right. If I can run faster, just run faster than you, right?
Absolutely. I've actually, we've had three competitions now. I've won all three. So, younger brothers, I'm holding it down
for
younger brothers out here.
Right on.
So, how did you get into mechanicking, being a mechanic?
Well, that's a little bit of a long story, I guess. I think maybe my dad kind of got me into it, you know, when you're younger and you're dad's fixing his own cars and you're helping him and you get a car and he's helping you fix stuff. But I never really thought I was going to be a mechanic. I kind of went after what he was doing. He was a pipe fitter. And so he was in a union and I kind of dabbled in that, but instead of doing the pipe fitter, I was going to be a welder. I wanted to get into the welding side of it. But in the union, you work for a little while, you're out of work for a long time. And then you're seeing people out in the parking lot with car problems. And then a little time goes by and I'm not doing anything and I need a job. And I found I liked, you know, working on cars and messing with cars. So I found a high school program that got your foot, cause I didn't go out there trying to find a job without any experience.
Right.
Get your foot in the door, kind of learn something first, you know? And I was in this high school program and I don't know, I'm 20 or something, you know, it was like an ROP class thing that you could go to. And, I learned a little bit, but I didn't think I was learning right. And then, so they had these classes or schools coming through like UTI and AAI, which is Arizona Automotive Institute. And they came in and they were offering programs and things. And so I wound up finding out about AAI. And so I took up doing that, came out to Arizona and went to school and started learning about stuff. And it's funny because you go to school and learn something and you were doing brake jobs before, but now you know what the name of the parts are called, you know, and how to make sure they get put together the right way. But it's expensive venture, I'll tell you that. You know, the trade schools are definitely expensive. Anybody can get their foot in the door of like going to college, but you got to pay as you go instead of having a loan, you know, that you don't pay till you're done school. But I don't know that it would be any better or not from a college class, but I think a college class is definitely cheaper, you know.
Right. Now, were you weren't living in Arizona at the time, were you?
No, I lived in California first, and then when I signed up to go to the automotive school in 94, moved out here, and I didn't have much money. My grandmother actually loaned me like $700 to come out here, and I told the school, I said, I need a place to stay, and I need a job. So they found me a place to stay, an apartment I rented that day, and then wound up finding a job at like Montgomery Ward's a week or so later. And busting tires and changing oil. That was my first job going to school.
Well, at least it's fitting.
Yeah, yeah.
And is there a lot of like mechanical schools out in Arizona? Because I actually have a couple friends who went out there, like just to go to school. For one went to for motorcycles, and one went for cars.
Right. I know of three for sure. There's the Arizona Automotive Institute. There's the UTI, which I think is Universal Technical Institute, and then the Motorcycles Mechanic Institute, the MMI. So there's two car and a motorcycle one that I know of.
Yeah, I think he graduated from the motorcycle place. I don't know if he's actually even working on motorcycles now, but I know that went and graduated. That was a couple of years ago now, but I'm old. I always forget that.
Yeah, join the club. Well, when you liked working with your hands, I think that's what kind of got me into it. And, you know, it's funny, I found out about the motorcycle thing later, and I'm like, man, I wish I'd known about that. Maybe I'd have did that instead. That would have been cool, you know, working on bikes. But
yeah, you're into dirt bikes too, right?
Yeah, I like dirt bikes, and I'll dabble with mine a little bit, you know, but if it gets anything serious, I don't take the time to do it. I had one years ago, but I pulled the engine out and took it to a shop, let them build it, and then I put it back in, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just, it was a time thing for me. I didn't want to take the time to do it.
Is it all pretty much the same, motorcycles and cars, or is there
I don't think so. There's a big difference, yeah.
You're like an idiot.
they're a big difference. And I guess I'm glad I got into cars instead of motorcycles, only because I think there's definitely – I would think there's a lot more jobs out there for automotive than there is for motorcycles, you know, because there's I think there's more of a demand, but I could be wrong about that because I don't know much about, you know, the motorcycle industry because I don't work in it.
It makes sense. But then at the same time, I feel like probably if you're really good at being at motorcycles, then it's probably easier to get a job because there's probably fewer people doing it.
Yeah, that makes sense, too. And there's plenty of motorcycle shops, I'm sure. No, I don't know that there's as many as there are car shops, for sure, but...
No, definitely not as many as there are car shops. It seems like you can... Well, up here is a little different, too, because you can only ride 6 months out of the year.
Yeah.
Down where you live, you can ride all year, I'm sure. So that's probably a big game. That's probably a big change just from that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a lot more bike shops out here in Arizona. There's a... It is mostly warm, like right now, stupid hot, but I think everywhere is right hot right now. But even in the winter, I guess the diehards would still ride their bikes out there, but it gets kind of cold for a couple days.
Well, you said it was like 116 degrees down there right now, so I don't know what cold is to you. It might be a little different than what it is to me.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Because, you know, it gets into the 50s and I'm cold, and you guys are probably getting... I don't know if you get negatives there, but you definitely getting into 20s. My brother lives in New Jersey, and they get snow and freezing weather, and oh, my gosh.
We definitely get into the negatives, but, like, I'm not even comfortable until it's 50.
Right.
I'm like, anything over 50 is honestly too hot for me. I'm built for the cold myself.
Yeah. We kind of get climatized, too. Yeah, my phone says it's 111, and it's 726 here right now.
That's absurd. What do you even do in that? Like, can you go outside, or are you trapped inside?
I think you kind of get used to it to a point. I mean, the people that are out in it, you get kind of used to it. You know, I see guys on their motorcycles in the town. I live in a little town, and, you know, the one guy was messing around on his bike. He wasn't riding at the time, but he was no shirt, tattoos. He's an animal out there in the sun, man. And he was dark too. It wasn't like he wasn't real light skinned anymore too, because he, you know, you get the tan and then you can handle the heat. But I think you kind of get used to it. Some people do. Otherwise, you just got to stay hydrated, you know. Wear a hat if you're going to work at it. Make sure you got a wet rag around your neck or something.
Yeah, see, I'm doing that up here, except at like 70 degrees. That's like, I take rags and put them in the freezer, like wet rags, put them in the freezer, and then keep them around my neck to stay cool. But when it's like 70 or 80, that's enough for me.
Oh, my gosh. That cracks me up, man. 70 or 80 is beautiful weather out here.
Yeah, no, not. I mean, most, to be fair, I'm weird. Most people don't like the cold like I do, but I just much prefer it, you know.
Yeah.
One thing that it seems like you guys have a lot out there is wildlife. You're constantly in cars. You had, I saw that you found two rabbits in cars.
Yep.
Where were they?
Well, they just hide places, you know. And then the last one, I posted one on Instagram about a little while ago about a squirrel that we found in there. And you know what's funny is that they're just in the engine compartment. And the one rabbit that I found, I didn't even know it was there. I'm working on the car. I'm almost done with the car. I'm lowering it down. I turn around and I see it. And then it sees me, of course. And that's why I think the one picture I have of it's on the hood, between the hood and the windshield.
Yeah.
Because it got up there. And then when the car got low enough on the lift, it jumped and ran, you know.
Dude, how lucky is that rabbit to not have been ground into dust or into sludge?
Well, I guess in one sense, it's makes us money that they're in there too sometimes, because the critters eat stuff. As annoying as it is, they like the mice and stuff like eating knock sensors, and that's all under the intake.
Right.
So you got to take that off. And the bad ones is when you fix something like that, and then it comes back a week later with the same problem because they weren't able to change any of where they're at, you know. And the stupid animal gets in there and eats it again.
And you're like, thank God. At least the second time that's easier to fix.
Yeah, you already know what they did again. But at that point, you're not sure if they did it again. You're like, already? You know? I literally had one do that a week later. It was they ate the wires on the injectors of a Dodge truck. I think it had a V10. And we get a harness, you know, and splice some new wires and make it all nice. And what happened is I think it took out the PCM too, because it shorted the driver to the PCM. So I think they had insurance and they paid for the repair. And then it was literally a week or two later, same thing happened. They ate the wires and it killed the computer again.
That's
crazy.
At least the insurance pays for it. I didn't think insurance would pay for that.
I think they did in that case. Now, that was many years ago. But I think if it happens a couple times, they're going to not keep doing it, you know?
Yeah, probably not going to be too happy with you anyways.
And then everybody has different tricks they try to use, putting, you know, mothballs or soap. Or I think what seems to be working for some lately is they use a blinking light that they put under the hood. And it just barely takes a little bit of battery power, but it constantly blinks and it deters them. But it deters them from that area. And then they just find somewhere else to eat.
My wife, actually, she has a 2011 Prius, and they're like notorious for having invaders like that, because the cabin air intake area is it was completely open, so it's just a hole with like nothing to stop anything from coming in.
Yeah.
So we were finding mice in her car, and you know, she was having issues with that. So what I did is I ended up just taking a screen and screwing it in and then seam sealing around it, and that put a stop to it. But those little critters will get in anywhere they can.
Oh yeah, they say if the head fits in, they'll squeeze the rest of herself in there.
It looks like you have quite the tool collection also.
Oh yeah, well, you know, you start buying it many years, and when 94 I went to school, and that started the tool buying.
Any brand that you recommend over any others?
Well, I'm like the Snap-on, but they're of course the most expensive. Well, sometimes, you know, they're seemingly the most expensive, but I've got on the Macro truck and the Cornwall truck, and something's more expensive there for the same tool. But most of the time, they're more expensive on Snap-on.
I have a bad history with Snap-on. I don't like.
Do you? Yeah, something bad happened?
I've never had... So Snap-on's supposed to have warranty. They're supposed to have the best warranty, but I've never been able to get anything warranted from a Snap-on dealer. Not in my life. Never once. I had bought a bunch of tools. The thing that broke the camel's back was I bought a tape measure.
Uh-huh.
And I had it for like less than a month, and it broke. It snapped right in half. And, you know, I hadn't been using it weird or anything that I can remember. I mean, nothing that would cause it to break. And he refused to warranty it. And I said, well, it says, like, isn't your thing that you guys warranty hand tools? And he said, it's not a hand tool.
Yeah.
Well, then what the hell is it? What do you mean it's not a hand tool?
All right.
So, that was the last tool I ever bought off a Snap-on dealer.
I think some of it has to do with the dealer, too. You get a good dealer, sometimes they'll do stuff anyway. But it all comes to how much money you're spending with them, too. You know, like I've had other trucks where you don't spend much money and they give you a hard time about warranty and stuff. And then, like you said, then you stop buying stuff from them because you're thinking, why do I need to buy it from you if you're not going to honor a simple thing?
You know? For sure. And, I mean, that's only my experience, too. I mean, obviously Snap-on is a very successful business.
Yeah.
But that was just the final thing that made it so that I didn't buy anything else after that.
Well, it's like they're not the only tool. I like Snap-on a lot, but I have some other stuff. I had some Cornwell and some Matco. And when I first started buying tools, I was buying Mac. And in the later years, I wound up switching a lot of my Mac stuff for Snap-on, basically because typically there's always a Snap-on truck where you're at. And Mac kind of disappeared. Now, I know they're around some places and maybe some states more than others. But where I'm at, it's almost non-existent.
Yeah, so, the same thing happened to us with the Cornwell.
Yeah.
I think there is one, but I think he just doesn't come by or whatever. I'm not really sure why. Or I think the old one retired. The new one just picked up a new route and never, for some reason, didn't come our way, I guess. But yeah, we had a Cornwell dealer and a Mac dealer that both did that same thing where we were buying tools off them, but now we can't get any of the stuff warranted because they're not coming out that way, which is no big deal. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, and then you wind up sending it back or something.
Yeah, and then you have to mail it in, and that's a pain in the ass.
Right.
Do that.
Yeah, I definitely have other stuff. But, you know, Cornwell's okay, and I like Matco. I've had some stuff of theirs. But you know what's bad is they shot themselves in the foot because there's not an official dealer that comes to our shop. And so there was one dealer that found out, you know, we got a hold of him or whatever. I don't remember how we wound up contacting him. But he wound up coming around, and it was, like, near his area, but not officially his area.
Right.
And then after a while of him doing that, we were doing okay. He couldn't come all the time. You know, it was kind of sporadic because of his busy schedule. But then the corporate finds out he's coming there, and they tell him he's not supposed to come there, and he can't come there. So now we don't get a Matco dealer because corporate, and I'm thinking, don't they want to sell tools? Why wouldn't you let the guy come there? It's nobody's area. If it was somebody's area, it would make sense, but it's nobody's area.
Right, at least until they get someone to cover the area. That's strange.
And it's funny because a block away from where we're at, like on the other side of the mall, there's a he goes to a shop over there. So, I'm here Wednesdays if you want to come, but, you know, trying to remember that. You know, you never go,
Yeah, let me go over there and do something. Tell your boss, hey, I'm going to run over to this other shop.
Right, okay. It's always busy when you want to do something.
Right. I actually have had a ton of luck with just, like, generic brands, like Husky hand tools, Cobalt, that kind of stuff. I've had a ton of luck. Pretty much all of my hand tools now are either Craftsman, Cobalt, or Husky.
Oh, that's cool.
Just because, I mean, they do break a little bit more often.
Yeah.
But I've never had an issue warrantying anything. I mean, I've brought in stuff that was melted to get warrantied, and I've never had a problem warrantying anything. So that's what I use a lot of now for hand tools.
Yeah, I think what keeps me with Snap-on. The rep that I got's warranty stuff, and maybe sometimes it's a little iffy. It's like, just don't tell him what you used it for, you know, because he knows.
That
shouldn't have broke.
I'm pretty rough on tools as.
Yeah,
You know, probably I'm rougher than the average person on tools.
I think I am sometimes too.
I go through a lot of tools.
Yeah, I've had some good success with gear wrench too. I've heard a lot of people say they're not great and whatever. And all I have of them are some ratcheting wrenches, and they seem to be okay, you know. And I'm about to do a video this weekend about a warranty, my experience with the warranty, because I've seen some people have trouble with, or heard about it, have a hard time warrantying them, and it worked out pretty good for me.
Yeah, I've always thought Gear Wrench was a great company. I didn't realize. Are they owned by Matco? I think they are.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know officially. I know that they're Apex. I do see that because I actually get, I've heard it, and then when I've got the wrenches warrantied, because I have to send it to them, we don't have a truck, and I get a, I'll tell you something about that in a minute too. But so I've had to send it to them. You just send a picture, you know, on their website, and then they email you, and then they send you the wrench or whatever that you're warrantying. But the Snap-on guy used to carry Gear Wrench, and I used to be able to warranty him through him. And then he says, well, they can't do that anymore. One, I guess they've come out with Gear Wrench trucks, and so maybe it's a competition. But then I hear other tool trucks might have still carry it. So I don't know if it's a Snap-on thing or what, but so I can't deal with him anymore on them.
I know we used to get the Gear Wrench used to be carried by our Matco dealer. But also,
yeah.
I think in the last couple of years, Snap-on has come out with ratcheting wrenches for, of their own.
Yeah.
I've never seen a Gear Wrench truck. That's cool, though. I feel like that would be a great one to get into it early on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how many there are now, but I've seen something on the internet about them, and that would be cool.
And the internet never lies, so.
Yeah, right. That commercial used to crack me up. I don't know if you ever saw it where it might have been insurance. I can't remember what it was about, but all I remember is that the girl says, oh, he's off the internet and he's French and he's all bonjour.
You know what commercial used to crack me up was the, I don't know if you remember when like pirating movies and music was like really big in the early 2000s.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There was this commercial and they would be like, they would plug a USB into a wall socket, and it would be like, you wouldn't download a house, would you? And I was always like, hell yeah, I would if I could get away with it. If I could download a house, you're goddamn right I would. It's a pirate life for me, baby.
All right.
Is there any tools that you, like, let's say I was just getting started in the mechanical field. Is there any tools that you would suggest that maybe someone wouldn't think of that you think would make is like kind of a must have for people just starting out?
I think you're probably going to hear the same thing from everybody, you know, basic hand wrench set, you know, the sockets and wrenches. Usually when you're starting, you're doing tires and oil changes. So having a decent half inch gun for doing rotating tires and stuff is definitely a must. That's like one of the first big things I think you buy is a half inch gun. And now it's getting all cordless, so people are going to that.
How do you like that?
I kind of like it. I've always had air tools, and so there you go, spending more money buying tools because now I'm on a Milwaukee kick. And so there's another one. I like the Milwaukee stuff. I haven't really used any of their hand tools, and I've heard some good and bad of Milwaukee, and I'm just going off of my experience. They seem to be okay, the ones I'm buying. I got a couple on some sales. I bought the big heavy-duty half-inch gun because it was on sale, and I was determined to, okay, I've got my half-inch air gun, a Snap-on one, and I was like, okay, well, I'll get the mid-torque one because that'll be good for rotating tires. But then the big one went on sale, so I got that. And it's awesome, and it's powerful, but it's like 8 pounds. It's heavy. So it's not necessarily good for running around doing rotates and stuff. The mid-torque probably would have been better. And then I recently got this stubby one, and that's pretty cool. And it can actually take the tire, you know, 3/8 stubby. It can take tires off, but some of them it does pretty easy. Some of it struggles, so I don't know how bad I'm hurting the gun using it, so I don't use it a lot doing that.
I was going to say, a lot of things have changed, even since I've started, because I can use, like, I have a DeWalt impact and drill set. And my DeWalt impact, I can use for almost everything I can use a 3/8 air impact for.
Yeah.
Almost. I mean, there's some stuff that, like bumpers occasionally when they're, like, real messed up. But, like, if my electric can't take it off, I'll usually just jump right up to a half inch because if the electric won't take it off, then the air probably won't take it off either.
Yeah.
At least not easily.
There's so many choices.
Yeah, there's been a lot of improvement in electric technology, even in the last, 10 years, just as batteries have gotten bigger and things have gotten stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember. I think my very first electric impact was a 9.7 volt Makita. And now I use a 20 volt DeWalt.
That's cool.
Obviously, it used to be like, you just used it and it didn't, the Makita would take off very little stuff, but if you needed to take off anything at real, even moderately sized, you would need to get an air impact. But I almost never use my air impact anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And Milwaukee just came out with that. Did you see that badass one-inch gun they just came out with?
No, I don't know if I've seen that one. Oh. I know the thing going around now is that impact wrench that looks like a heavy-duty, regular, like a 3/8. They call them impact wrenches now, but everybody's been doing videos about that newer one.
Which one is it? Is it a Milwaukee?
It's a Milwaukee. I think it's still a 3/8, but it's got like 230 foot-pounds of torque or something. It's kind of a beefy-looking ratchet,
Oh, okay, yeah, I have.
With that big head and all that. I don't know the number on it or anything.
Yeah, no, but I have that. That thing's pretty sweet.
It looks pretty cool.
And there's so many options for electric tools now, too. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they were like that before, but it just seems like there's so much stuff, like the ratchets. You can get the. I really want to get an electric die grinder just because, like, when you're die grinding, just having the hose hanging off is a pain in the butt, especially when you're trying to be, like, real careful on stuff.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, when it's going to be. I probably need to buy a new impact soon because my, like, I don't know what's going on, but I've abused it so much that the, like, just, like, the whole head is just falling off.
Right.
The whole head is, like, loose now and it's just coming off. So I think I need a new impact. And then after that, I think I'm going to buy one of those electric die grinders.
I definitely want to get one of those. I've been eyeballing one for a while. And then the last time I squirreled, as it were, and got that 3/8 stubby instead because it went on sale or something. I was like, man, I wanted to get that die grinder first, but then I got the stubby.
Whatever, man. Plenty of time, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's just so many options, and then when you start looking at, the guns, the 3/8 gun, there's one that's 200 foot-pounds, and then there's one at 600 foot-pounds, and, it's like, which one do you get? Me, I'm always about more power, but then I wound up getting the stubby, and it's been pretty good, but it's definitely limited on its ability,
I always have that problem, too, where I don't know, is more power always better, Because obviously in your mind you're thinking, yeah. But
right.
Then, sometimes when you're doing something and, you don't really need that much force or whatever, it can lead to other problems like breaking, stripping.
Definitely. You definitely got to get used to what you're dealing with,
Yeah. So would you suggest, you being the expert, would you suggest always going the more powerful route, or are you more the kind of person who's going to say, kind of get what you need, I guess, and don't overshoot?
You're probably better off getting something you need, but I get into where I want the stuff with the most power. And then I learn how to use it without breaking something,
Yeah, that's the real trick.
But the most power, like you said, isn't always the best idea because something a little less power will do. I know with the stubby one that I've got now, I've been seeing what it could do. And then I'm still checking it with a ratchet anyway. You tighten up a bolt and you're still making sure it's tight with a ratchet because you don't know what it can do. I'm so used to using the air tools and you slap that thing down, it's tight. And most of the time, at first you might check it to see what it can do. And then after a while you trust it and you don't worry about it. But
yeah.
I haven't done that with the electric stuff. I haven't done that yet. I still check torques. I still check and make sure it's tight, because you don't need that kind of problem.
No. Well, and when you're doing body work, luckily you don't have to torque too much stuff.
Yeah.
Some stuff you do, but mostly it's just cab parts and that kind of thing. So you don't really need to torque those things. Thank God.
Yeah. And then go ahead.
I was just going to say, I hate torquing stuff.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do or don't. I don't know what the mentality is anymore with people. I know I got into using torque wrenches and stuff. Brackets and things, I'm not worried about it, but I'm doing an intake or a head or certain things. You know, I'm going to torque it because it's even and that's what it should be. And then you got the confidence of knowing I did it the way it was supposed to be done. So it shouldn't fail, you know.
Rule of thumb is always comes down to safety. Like if it's something that's going to be like the wheels I always torque, if it's something that's going to be that could in a catastrophic failure, like really hurt somebody, then I always do. Or to cause a major issue, like you said, tightening down heads, tightening down that kind of stuff. You want to torque that stuff because if that something goes wrong with those things, you know, that's a major problem. If someone's armrest falls off, then that's not really that big of a deal. I can always put those back on. But when it comes to safety, that's kind of my rule of thumb anyways, is that, even though I hate it, if it comes to safety, I'm going to torque.
Because you know who they're coming to if it doesn't work or something happens, you know.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of one of the nice things about working on trucks is there's not as many safety features on car as there are on cars.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like a peace of mind thing because I worry about stuff like that just because it would just upset me if I found out that something I did caused someone to get hurt or something. So.
Yeah, definitely.
That's one nice thing about working on trucks is they're so big that that's their safety mechanism.
Yeah, no kidding. Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, back to the electric stuff for a minute. I like the Milwaukee because the price point, I've been wanting to get some Snap-on stuff. It's just so expensive, I haven't justified doing it yet. And then you wind up with the price and you have the power. And there's where something where you were talking about the power where I'm like, oh, well, the Milwaukee has more power and it's cheaper. The Snap-on's more expensive. It has less power. I'm going with the Milwaukee, you know?
I will say I have – this is going to sound – I know that I'm biased against Snap-on. But I will say that I have not been impressed with Snap-on's electric or actually Matco's electric brand.
Oh, really?
They feel really awkward when you hold them. I don't know if it's just because Milwaukee and DeWalt and stuff, like they've been doing it so long.
Yeah, yeah.
But they feel like they're made to fit in your hand. The Snap-on ones and the Matco ones that I've used anyways feel very awkward and kind of cumbersome. I just don't really like the way they feel. And if you're going to have to hold it, you know, 8 hours a day, then it better feel at least okay.
Right. You know what I do like of the Snap-on one is what I call the little zippy gun. It's a little screw gun, basically, there, and it has the toggle switch, you know.
Oh, yeah. I actually have one of those.
And I love that thing. I use it probably almost – I definitely using it every day, like one of the most used tools I have. And I've gone through stages where, you know, I was all air tools, and I seen that when they first started coming out, I'm like, I don't need one of those. They're stupid. And then one went on sale, an ugly yellow one for like $100. I'm like, I'll give it a shot. I'm like, how'd I go this long without one of those things? Those are cool, man. And then I've gotten a couple since then as it broke or something happened, you know, because you only get like a year warranty out of those things anyway, and you can probably get them fixed, but so I get a different one. But I'm disappointed in their newest one. They come out with the new brushless Snap-on one, and I'm like, man, I'm going to be on board. I bet I'm going to get one of those. And I'm reluctant. I might not do it because they changed. The whole selling point for me on those was the toggle switch. Where,
oh, yeah,
you know,
they did that, yeah.
They got away from it. Now it's on the side, just like a Milwaukee or a DeWalt or anything else. So what's the allure, you know?
Right.
I'm going to pay $500 for a brushless gun, and it's probably half the price of it for this comparable thing in another brand.
One thing about the Snap-ons I will say that's good is that those smaller ones, so like the gun, that little toggle gun, the flashlight, and they have a reciprocating saw and an electric ratchet, a power ratchet or whatever the hell they call them. And they all use the same battery system.
Yeah.
And those, that little four pack right there, that's a nice little kind of, you know, group. I like those. I do like the smaller Snap-on electric tools. What I was saying before was the bigger ones, like the Impacts and stuff. But I do that little battery system they have that's like you said, it's like the little gun, and then there's a flashlight, reciprocating saw, like a little sawzall, handheld sawzall, and a little electric ratchet. That's a nice little system.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't used the saw, but it is nice when you do those because you can buy another tool only, and you already have a couple batteries, like I did with my Dialyte for checking AC leaks.
Right.
And, you know, they get really expensive, and it was like $90 for the tool only. A ridiculous amount to have the battery and the charger. I'm like, I already got a battery, and I'm not going to use that as much as a regular flashlight. So I bought it by itself, and that thing has been super bright. I love that thing.
Oh, my God. How ridiculous is it that the batteries are more expensive than the actual tool?
It seems like that one, like with the Milwaukee stuff, too. You know, but not more expensive, but they're super expensive.
All those electric systems are the same way. The battery is, like, by far the most expensive part of the gun or of the system. The batteries are ridiculous. And then the charger is ridiculously expensive, too.
Yeah. And then you wind up with extra ones. Like, lately I've been getting stuff, like, with the Milwaukee brand. I've been getting stuff where it comes with a battery and a charger or whatever. And then you wind up with all these extra chargers. Because I told a friend of mine that wanted to get one, he found a deal, and we saw it on the internet, and I'm like, hey, it's one with a battery, but no charger. I'm like, I got an extra charger. If you get it, you can have this, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. I have like 7 chargers in my
toolbox.
I just, even for stuff that I don't even have anymore, I just can't bring myself to throw away.
Right. Repurpose them, man. Give them away or sell them or something, you know?
I'm just going to be buried with them, I think.
Yeah. We're all tool hoarders.
Are there any tools that you think a lot of people buy coming into the field that they don't need or that you would steer people away from?
I haven't really thought about that. You know, I don't see a lot of new people coming into it lately.
I'm out here.
I'm not sure.
That's why they hired me.
What's that? They're out to find out?
I said I'm out here asking the hard questions. That's why they hired me.
Right. Something that they don't need. Jeez.
I'll give you an example. In bodywork, you know, I see a lot of new people coming in and they buy hammers and dollies right away. But, you know, the one, hammers and dollies, the usage of hammers and dollies is way down because parts are so cheap now that a lot of times you don't even you just switch them out anyways. You don't even really repair
them.
Yeah,
you're not fixing them.
Mm-hmm. But like all of the beginner body kits and everything all still come with them. But I would always just kind of steer people away from buying hammers and dollies because you're just not really going to use them as much as you did in the past. Like it's almost like a leftover. And you still use them once in a while. I'm sure that my dad's going to give me some shit about saying that. But you're not using them as much. And like a beginner certainly isn't using them because, you know, beginners are doing things like sanding and that kind of thing. But is there anything like that in mechanics where like people buy them maybe, but they don't really need them or they buy them right out the gate and they could go without them for 10 years before they're actually going to use it?
I think probably more like the specialty stuff. You know, you get into specialty tools and it's meant for certain things and it's like, you don't need that yet, you know?
Right.
Maybe for an example, like, well, a scanner is definitely one. If you're just getting into it, you're not buying it, it's putting that kind of money into something. You know, super big boxes that are really expensive, you know, start small, work your way up, see if you're even going to stay into it, you know, before you spend that kind of money. Cause especially if you're on the truck, yeah, you can get it without on payments, but it's expensive, especially when they get you on their credit program and the interest.
The house payment.
Yeah. It gets expensive. That's a good question though. I mean, I think specialty tools would be the one, and I can't think of something right hand other than, you know, like scanners and big boxes as far as.
Are scanners usually supplied by the employer or do all employees have their own scanning tool?
I think it depends. Like where I'm at, they bought a scanner and they have the, what is it? The Deerus. And he hasn't stepped up to the Zeus yet, which is the Snap-on ones, you know?
Yep.
And I don't blame him because it's like $15,000. And my problem with the scanners anymore that are like that is they're like computers. So they crash and they have problems. You're better off getting one like the Modus Edge or something that's just a scanner and not a computer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, you're not, you don't have to tune the thing. You just need to know what's wrong with it.
So I think at some, I think a lot of shops might have one. I know I worked at one shop where the shop had one, but all the other guys had one too, so the shop really didn't have one. Or they didn't use the shop one. I used the shop's one because I didn't have a good one. I had this old OTC one that's outdated, and so I was using theirs. And the shop I'm at now, they have a nice one. And then one of the guys actually wound up buying the Modus, so he had his own scanner, which is cool to have. It's good to have a couple around because sometimes one won't do something, or there's more than one guy working at the shop, so you might need two scanners going at the same time. You got to wait for the other guy's scanner, you know, to be done with it.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be it. That's got to be it. That's one of the problems with shop tools is when you, two people need it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're the low guy on the totem pole, then you're really screwed.
Right.
Because then you're waiting all day.
Yeah.
They'll hold on to that thing just to spite you.
Well, I'm glad I haven't dealt with that too much. I know some shops are like that, and the guys don't get along and stuff, but most of the time I think it's pretty – hopefully they're working like a team, you know, but
– Oh, for sure. I think most people are, at least in my experience – I mean, I've only worked at my family shop, so – but we're very much like a team, you know. We kind of have to be, so – especially working on trucks, there's not a lot you can do, you know – You're always gonna need a second set of hands on trucks, just even if it's just moving parts, you know, out to the parts trailer or whatever you're doing. So it's you kind of have no choice but to work as a team.
Yeah.
You can't really do anything by yourself because they're so big, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I can't because I'm super strong.
Yeah. Right.
But most people can't. Most normal humans can't.
The average not superheroes can't do it. Then you got to teach them how to use leverage and stuff. You know?
Do you ever miss living out in California? Have you ever thought about going back? Sorry to shift gears on you. I just thought of that.
Oh, that's all right. No, not really. Mostly just because the price of everything. You know, when we got out here, we didn't have a plan. You know, I came out here, me and my wife, and I didn't really have a plan of what we were going to do. I just was going to school, get a career, get a job, make money for my family. And didn't really go, okay, we're going to go back to California, we're done, or we're going to go here. We just, the cost of living out here was better, so we just kind of stayed.
That's a ballsy move to just go to another state with no plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because when I moved out here, I was out here a couple months. Like I said, I didn't come out with hardly any money. Out here a couple months before I could even bring my wife and my son out. And so then they finally were able to come out, and we just went from there. But, yeah, she would rather be somewhere else. She'd like to be where you're at, where it's actually cold and nice out and not ridiculously weather, you know?
Yeah. Well, isn't California hot? I know that it's, like, warm, but it doesn't get to, like, 116, does it?
I don't think it does. I know we were in, like, the Riverside County area kind of thing, you know, Southern California. And I don't remember it being that hot. I know it's definitely hotter out here.
Yeah, I don't think it gets – I mean, maybe it does. I feel like Arizona's probably got to be, like, one of the hottest states in America, though.
Probably.
That and Florida. Florida.
Right.
Florida is, like, ridiculous. So it's, like, I've only been to Florida twice, but it's, like, as soon as you get off the plane, it's, like, you're wet. Like, the air is just wet. It's awful.
Well, and they always joke about it's a dry heat here. And it makes a difference, too, because, like, Florida is really humid. You know, and so it might not be 100 degrees out, but it feels like it because it's so humid.
Although I guess when I was boxing, I would go in the sauna and I would crank that thing up. I feel like I was cranking that up to like 160, 180 almost.
Oh, yeah.
You can turn those things up. Yeah, you can turn those things way up. And I used to do that all the time, and that didn't bother me at all.
Well, see, that's because you wanted to do it.
Yeah, I guess.
It's when you don't have a choice that it bothers you.
That's true. I guess I could have left at any time. But did I really want to do it? Because there's always naked old guys in there. And that was never – that's not really something I wanted to do.
Right. Well, I meant the heat part, of course.
So if someone is just like a normal tech and they want to go for the ASE certification, how do they go about doing that?
Well, just you got to get some experience. Like you said, I think they still have you do 2 years, but you basically just get some study books and whatnot. Along with the internet now, it's so easy to find test questions and things, not the actual questions, but, you know, some practice stuff.
Yeah.
And then ASE themselves actually have practice things. I think some of them you have to buy. Some of them might be some free things. But basically, you would sign up and you have to register for the test, and it costs money. I'm not sure. There's like a registration fee and then a price per test. And I know where I've been, most of the shops are pretty good about paying for it, or else they maybe you pay for it and they'll reimburse you. I worked at one shop where not only did they pay for it, but they gave you $100 per test when you passed. So that was pretty cool because I do four at a time and you're getting $400 for passing them. So that was nice.
Why did you leave there? That sounds
like I know, right? But yeah, you just gotta apply for them. You know, it's like taking any other certification. You just go and pay for it and take it. And it's changed a bit too because I used to like it. We kind of touched on it earlier and we didn't get talking about that. But I used to like it before when it was paper and pencil.
Yeah.
And you had like the test center was open for 4 hours, and you have 4 hours to take as many tests as you want. So I usually limited myself to four at a time. Some people go in there and take all eight or maybe just one, whatever they want to do. But you had 4 hours to take as many as you wanted. Now it's computerized and you go in a test center and each test is a certain amount of time. So say you have 25 questions, you got 30 minutes to do that. And when your time's up, your time's up.
Oh, that sucks. They probably just changed it just for money purposes. That way they could.
Probably. I wish they'd give you like, here's your test, you have this much time, but there's obviously more people wanting. And then who knows how long this COVID thing is going to go on, because they're probably not even doing that. I don't even know how they're doing the testing now, but it used to be you'd go to a center and do it, you know.
Oh, that's a good point. Is that why they switched to the electronic, or is just that just the way things went?
No, that went a while ago.
Okay.
So the last time, I think it's only been one time so far, maybe two, when I had to recertify, I did it that way. I think it's been one time, because you got to test every 4-5 years.
I feel like there's something about taking a test on a computer too that's different. Like,
yeah.
Like once I don't know. I feel like when I would take tests paper and pencil, I was always more confident than when I did it on a computer. For some reason.
Yeah, that's 5 years because I did my last one in 2016, and I get recertified next year in 2021.
Are you gonna pass?
Yeah. Oh, I certainly hope so. I've been passing so far, but.
You better do you still study or you still think you're gonna have to study, or do you just
Look over stuff anyway. Like I said, it's about getting used to how they do the questions, you know.
Right.
Because you know what you know, but things change all the time too, you know, and stuff that you knew 20 years ago isn't the same now,
unfortunately.
Yeah. So you got to keep up with it too and keep learning so that you can keep up with technology. And if you want your certifications, you better keep up on it to be able to pass the test too. And I always study, like I said, just because I'm not a great test taker. So I try making sure I know what they want you to know.
How do you feel about the electric cars and that are becoming more and more popular now?
I haven't worked on many, so I'm not crazy about it yet. But there's another thing where things start changing. If you're going to stay in it, you better learn how to do it. You know, I'm sure we'll always have regular cars, but even like the hybrids and stuff, we don't get a lot of that. And they turn some of the stuff away because we just don't have the experience doing it.
Right.
At the shop I'm at. And they don't really get, you know, we don't get the training for it. And when you get into that hybrid stuff and it's got the thousands of, definitely hundreds of volts going through it, you really got to be careful. There's even special gloves. Now, I don't know how much it's changed in the past. They used to have switches and stuff to turn things off. And because I don't mess with them anymore, you know, other than oil changes, brakes, simple stuff, not getting into that part of the system. I'm not sure how it works now, but they used to be gloves that were rated to handle 1,000 volts. So you didn't get your arm fried off if you touched the wrong thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know my wife, cause I do the work on our cars, and she has, like I said, she has a second gen Prius, and that one you have to disconnect the battery just to do anything on it, even to just It suggests disconnecting the batteries when you do the brakes, when you do the oil change, all of it. You're supposed to always, or what did I just say? Disconnect the brakes? No, you're supposed to disconnect the battery.
Yeah. You're talking about the high voltage battery, right?
Yeah, you got to go in the back where it's stored and disconnect that. I don't know if the issue is that you will get shocked or if the issue is that something you could do could potentially short out the system or burn out the system or something. I'm not sure why. But yeah, you
probably even both.
Just the most basic thing, you're supposed to go in and disconnect the battery.
So I've never even hardly looked at one. Is it like a regular battery where it has terminals you unbolt and then you're safe?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it looks different, but you just kind of
right.
pull it up in the back and you just unscrew it and the plug comes off.
So that's where it's gone now. See, they just, you unbolt the, unscrew the terminal from the battery, basically. It used to be when they first came out, they had like a switch that you would turn off.
Oh yeah,
so that's how long ago it's been since I even went to a class about how they work. But...
I mean, it's also very possible that I just did it wrong. So don't count me out. But I will send you a picture tomorrow of it if I can get.
It's been a while
since I've had to work on a car, but I should be able to. I'll get right in there and I'll shoot a picture for you and send it to you so you can see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But yeah, those things are. I know that's a concern is the safety aspect. I don't know how how dangerous they actually are. Honestly, I don't know much about electric cars. I like burning dinosaurs, you know. So
right.
But it is kind of the way the industry does seem like it's going is going more green and more electric and.
Definitely.
I mean, some of those cars are nice too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're starting to get down a little better in prices, I think. Like, the Tesla is totally electric.
I actually like that Tesla truck. I know everybody hates it, but it's really cool.
That's cool. My problem with the electric cars, though, is their range, you know, personally. Because I travel 43 miles to get to work, you know. So it's like, and I guess most of them by now can go a couple hundred miles. So you'd probably make it to work and back. But if you want to go on a long trip, and I'm not sure where they are with the technology.
You travel 40 miles to work?
Yeah.
Why?
Just because I live kind of out of the city, you know?
Holy, how long did it take you to get to work?
Well, lately with the traffic being lighter because everybody stays in, it's a little better. I can probably get there in like 45, 50 minutes. But I was giving myself an hour, even an hour and a half with traffic because some of the freeways are so bad.
Jeez.
But it would take me about an hour to get that far because of traffic.
That's rough. At least it sounds like you must be right next to a highway, though, so that's probably helpful.
Yeah, it's only a couple miles to the highway, get down the road, and then a couple miles off the highway. But then you're going a couple different freeways to do it, and one of them's worse than the other as far as traffic, you know?
You want to know something? You want to hear something crazy that I learned the other day? The average person before the automobile came out would generally travel within a 12-mile radius of their house for their entire life.
Wow.
So you travel like quadruple what the average person used to travel their whole life in 1 hour.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That is, isn't that? That's wild. That's like, I read a book about Henry Ford and Thomas Edison. And that was one of the things they talked about is how like people until like Henry Ford came around, like most people just spent like the vast majority of their life within 12 miles because that's the distance a horse can go without until it starts like getting difficult or whatever. I don't know anything about horses, so before the horsiness wears off, but like you can go 12 miles before it starts getting more difficult, I guess. So that on average, most people live their entire life within 12 miles of their house of where they were born.
So have you heard anything newer, like what they say now?
No, I have no idea. I would imagine people, I mean, I don't even think there is an average now. I mean, you can go anywhere in the world and only, under a day.
Because I think about people that live in the city, you know, and if you're, like, say you were born and raised in that city and it's big enough, you probably could get away with a 12-mile radius almost. I mean, other than going on trips and stuff, you know, but, I mean, just a normal day living,
yeah,
you wouldn't have to go very far. And it's funny how the people relate travel time, too, because I work so far away from where I live, you know, you're down in the city and you talk to people and they're like, the other side of town is so far, man, that's like a couple miles. That's, but it, traffic makes a difference, too, and it's like, that's going to take too long. I'm like, you're worried about a couple miles. I'm driving 40 minutes to get here. Everything's far for me, so that's the easy going across town.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I don't know what the average is now. I think it was – I would think that because it's so easy to relocate now,
yeah,
so, like, you could be 12 miles from where you were born.
Yeah.
So I would think because it's so easy to relocate now that it's –
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You should have, like – you know, you can have a kid. I mean, my wife lived in Portland for 3 years and then moved back, you know, Portland, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
She'd travel across the country and then move back. Like, relocating is so easy now. I don't really think there's, like, other than money, there's really no limitation on how far you can travel now cheaply. I mean, you can get a I can get a bus ticket across the country for, like, $30.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to go places now.
Yeah, so I don't think... You know, I would think that the average is, like, some ridiculous amount. Because some people, if it's just the average of everybody, like, you think about how much, like, you know, celebrities or whatever must travel, like, how far they must travel in their life.
Yeah.
One plane ride just around the world is, like, what's that, like, 3,000 miles or something?
Yeah.
No, America. Huh. It's definitely more than that. Don't listen to me. I'm not very
Yeah,
smart.
3,000 just to get to the other side of our country, I think.
So, like, yeah, I mean, that's a – I don't think – the average must just be such a high number now. I don't even think you – it's even worth thinking about.
And yeah, and we think about that here, too. What about other countries and places that don't have many cars and things, you know, where they're still walking? They probably stay pretty close.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
You know, underdeveloped places and stuff where they don't have the technologies and the – Of course, I see everybody has cell phones. Doesn't seem to matter where you're at now.
That's what about going the other direction? What about when we can travel into space? Like, what about when
right?
space travel is, like, normal and they normalize, like, everybody has a rocket just like everybody has a car today?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny when you think about stuff like that. Like, even in television programs and things, think about 20 years ago what you're watching. And you look at those shows and you're like, man, that was cheesy. I can't believe we watch that stuff. And then what's going to be in 20 years from now from the things you think are cool are now, or, you know, the things that you think are cool now are going to be like, are we going to think that way in 20 years from now? I can't believe we're watching that stuff.
When I look back at the 90s and just everything that came out of the 90s, I'm just like, what were we thinking? What,
right.
What a disaster that decade was.
Right. And yet some of the stuff comes back around, you know?
I know. Well, hopefully none of that comes back around.
Right. Yeah. That's funny.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on with me today. That was an awesome conversation. I appreciate you taking the time to have it with me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it, man. It's pretty cool.
And where can people find you?
Well, I have the Works for Tools on Instagram and on YouTube. And it's WORX, the letter 4, TOOLZ.
Awesome. And
so
that's
spelled a little different, be something different, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. But I'm sure that Works for Tools has probably been taken since the beginning of Instagram. Oh,
yeah. Actually, oh, spelling it right, probably.
You know what's crazy? You know the show Unsolved Mysteries?
Yeah.
They, like, just came out with a new season. And I noticed that they have unsolved.com.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I don't even – I don't know if they've held it for, like, all these decades or if they – they had a show in the 80s and I think the 90s, and then they stopped, and then it just resurfaced. So, like, I don't know if they've held on to the domain name or if they bought it, but that's crazy. Unsolved.com, that's, like – I can't imagine when that was first bought up.
I don't know. We'll have to look it up now and see if it has all the shows, because there's a lot of stuff that gets stopped on TV, but you can still find it on the internet, you know?
My wife is really into true crime, so she recently, like, when this Unsolved Mysteries came out, so now she's rewatching all, they're all on Hulu.
Uh-huh.
Because she's rewatching like all these old murder mysteries and stuff. I don't know. She's really into it. I'm not really into that.
We kind of got into some of that stuff too. We watched the Criminal Minds and what's the other one? Oh, darn it. I can't think of it.
Detective shows.
CSI.
My wife is so into those shows that, like, she... So, like, obviously there's only so many unsolved mysteries, so, like, some shows have, like, duplicates, right?
Yeah.
Episodes where, like, they'll cover the same case. And she's watched so much of these fucking things that she can, like... She'll be, like, she'll know the answer to the... Or she'll know, like, the solve or whatever at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Figured out.
Because she's already seen it on another program. She loves that. That's, like, for some reason, that's her jam. I don't get it, but good for her.
That's cool.
Well, I hope you have a wonderful night, man, and I will talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks a lot, Nick. Talk to you again. Bye.
Bye.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really appreciate it. If you could do me a favor and leave me a review, 5 stars, 1 star, I don't care. Just let me know what you think of the episode, what I can do to make it better. Thank you so much, and we're out.